This is Inside Open Wheel with your host, Jeremy Scott.
From the Trackon Multimedia Studios just outside of Chicago, this is Inside Open Wheel. Hello, everybody. I'm Jeremy Scott, and it's another busy show, thankfully. Charlie Ante, our driver analyst, joins us, but going to preview what you're going to be listening to here in just a little bit. Ian Rodriguez is the newest driver for Newman Walks Racing in FR Americas. Now, he just came off a test, but before he went to test at VIR, when he was at the shop, the only base shop, he did sit down and talk with us. We'll chat with him in just a little bit. Max Esterson is your champion in the TireRack.com Road to Indy E-Series, but he's not going to be in the Road to Indy Championship. He's going to be in the British Formula 4 Championship, a series that Charlie is very well versed in. So the three of us all sit down and chat about that. Also, I sit down with a one-on-one interview with American F3 driver Juan Manuel Correa. You definitely want to listen in for that. We'll also preview the Detroit Grand Prix for the Coca-Cola Kokomo Indy Elite Series. Also take a look at the All-Star Race for the TireRack.com Road to Indy E-Series. And Charlie, we have another E-Series to follow.
Oh, boy, what is that?
Oh, we'll tell you in just a little bit. But first, if you want to leave us a voicemail, 815-714-9260, drop us an email, insideopenwheel@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, at Inside Open Wheel. If this is your first time listening to us, thank you for listening. Wherever you're listening to us, click subscribe, give us a rating, let us know how you liked this show. All right, so there's just a lot of driver announcements. We'll say that much. I can say there was some testing at VIR this past week for FR Americas. I've got to pull up Race Monitor, which I've got to ask Charlie. Have you used you've used Race Monitor? I'm assuming, correct?
Yes.
Have you used Race Hero?
No, I have never heard of it actually.
Okay, so Race Hero, a lot of different series are going to Race Hero, like your SCCA. I think SCCA's some regions are doing it. I do know that NASA is moving over to Race Hero, which I find is quite interesting. But where are the results? I bet you I have to go into my tablet. Nope, there it is. Okay. It's interesting to see what it is. I know Race Monitor, you have to pay for to use the app. I don't remember if you have to use Race Hero or not. I might be using Race Hero this year. So here's what happened in F4. FR America's Matt Christensen, fastest overall in Monday's session with a 56.5. That's a 156.5. In Tuesday's session, Juju Noda, 56.1. Interesting to note in the sessions, Arias Diukamijian was in the top and did not get lower than fourth throughout the whole day at F4. Thank you. Nick Persing looking pretty good. Chloe Chambers led a couple of sessions. Also, Emily Linscott not doing too bad. 16 cars entered in that. In the FR Americas test session, Hunter Yaney fastest with a 144.2 on Monday. Tuesday, I think it was Jordan Missig who was quick. Let me look. I've got to go back. No, he wasn't quick. Okay, so that was indeed Hunter Yaney, fastest both days. Second day with a 43.8. A couple of notes there as well. So TJ Speed Motorsport announced that they've got a signing with a new driver. I'm hearing that the driver was not able to make the second day, because that's when they were expecting this mystery driver to be a part of the test. So none other than Victor Franzoni hopped in the car. He was in the top five for most of those sessions as well, 44.9 on the third session. Seven cars were out there for those races, for those days, I should say, at least. Jim Booth, that's a name you remember, Charlie. He actually has an FR Ligier, and he was out there running laps.
That name does ring a bell.
Yeah, so that's interesting to note. Something I told you yesterday, too. I texted it to you. So I was at a store that used to be a prominent sponsor in IndyCar back, I would say, late 2000s, early 2010s. And It was interesting to see that they used to, obviously, when Hot Wheels had the licensing and rights to the IndyCar series, they used to have their cars in the Hot Wheel display. So I figured, you know, every once in a while I'll go back to the diecast display and see what Hot Wheels they have. I'm still waiting for a Jack Baldwin Hot Wheel, by the way. I was promised that, and Hot Wheels never delivered. I'm not happy.
Carrying that one around.
I've been carrying that one around for a while. Anyway, so Greenlight now has their diecast at this store. They have lots of different neat little themes in there. Pretty cool. No IndyCar. NASCAR has, I can't remember if it's a Lionel that's doing it or Racing Collectibles that has the rights to that NASCAR brand. They have, you know, little diecast. Okay. I'm used to that because a lot of places have those.
Mm-hmm.
What perplexed me is the fact that they have Formula E diecast in 164 models.
Hmm.
So, begs the question, when is IndyCar going to have Greenlight or somebody mass produce diecast so that way we can get, you know, the younger generation interested in these in the series?
Well, they're probably going to have that before they have a fully licensed video game.
I can confidently make that. All right, let's not go down that road. I don't disagree. That is a battle that I've been fighting for years. But it, you know, I know they make the 164 diecasts in, you know, and you can buy them at the track, buy them on certain websites, but there needs to be an affordable way to mass produce these diecasts, sell them at these big box stores, so that way these younger generations, you know, when they're looking at the Hot Wheels, when they're looking at the Matchbox, the Johnny Lightnings, they can see these Indy cars and go, oh, those are cool cars. Mommy, Daddy Day, I want this.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's going to turn these kids into race fans.
Yeah, I am completely disconnected from the youths of today because it's hard for me to really sort of get a good sense of how effective that is. I mean, I remember it would have been effective when I was younger. Right. I mean, I'm sure it was. I remember, you know, being 6-7 years old and pushing the Indy cars around the carpet while my mom was working.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, do kids still do that?
You know,
I guess they do.
Yeah, they do, because I think the handful of times that I've been past the Hot Wheels section this past year, it's been 50% full. And before, you know, the world shutdown happened, I mean, they would restock it, but it was more full than what it is now. So you've got kids still buying Hot Wheels and playing with Hot Wheels. It warms my heart.
Well, that's good. Now that I think about it a bit, I know my nephew loves getting toy cars.
Right.
And I try to get him open wheel cars as often as I can.
Well,
so doing my part.
Remember too, when the when Hot Wheels had the rights to Indy cars, they made just generic Indy cars. Even that was beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And you know, another thing that could be a completely new rant in its own, but I mean, when you say that people, you know, see the Indy cars and say, "Oh, that's cool. I want to know more about it." I am strongly of the opinion that the aesthetics of the Indy car post-merger have held it back greatly.
Okay, I can see that.
What I mean by that is that the car has been really ugly for a long time. In my opinion, 2018 was the first time that we truly had a decent-looking Indy car since 1995. And of course, that's, you know, Champ Car aside.
Yeah, we're not talking Champ Car. No. By the way, if anybody's looking to offload their Champ Car diecast, insideopenwheel@gmail.com. Sorry. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, I've lost my train of thought now.
We're talking about how you feel the design of the quote unquote Indy cars of what they're known now held everything back.
Yes, and so, you know, I mean, a lot of people when you get into this discussion, they'll say, well, you know, race cars need to go fast and form follows function and all that. I mean, yes, but I would, I mean, you know, people who want, like, you know, I watch a lot of like redecoration shows, and people will spend a lot of money for a really nice toilet, like,
yep,
a really nice looking toilet.
Oh yes.
And so, and that is something that needs to be functional. So a race car needs to be functional, although you can argue that in a spec series or a series with a spec chassis like IndyCar, that I would say that aesthetics are more important because they're all the same. So who cares if something would be faster? And it's a race car. I mean, race cars need to look and sound cool,
mm-hmm,
because that's the whole, like, it needs to capture the imagination of the viewer. And if you have an ugly race car that is not pleasing to look at or pleasing to listen to, then you may, in the worst instances, you may push away potential fans. But what's equally as bad is that you may fail to capture people that would be interested in a car that was looking, that looked better.
Excuse me. So you bring up a good point. By the way, there's another US 500 video. We'll watch that after we get done recording at some point, because there's just so much in the way of videos talking about the US 500 and that. Anyway, you just brought up a good point that reminded me of a video I watched on YouTube the other day. It's called Why IndyCar is Actually Really Good. It's by Dylan James GP, and he's an F1 guy, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But that's one of the things that he lists, and I'm going to send this to you so you can watch it too. Oh, not that. He lists the fact that the cars sound better. He feels the Indy cars sound better than the F1 cars. And I get that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I can't tell. I wouldn't want to go to an F Formula E race for the sound.
Have you been to a Formula E race?
I've not. That's on my bucket list, though.
I went to, they come here to New York City, it's a regular part of the schedule. And I went, I think, 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I was surprised by how much I enjoyed it. I mean, the biggest problem was that there was very little on-track activity.
Right.
But when the cars are going, it's interesting. I think what I realized is that if you try to force it to conform to your expectations of what car racing is, then you'll kind of be confused and disappointed. But if you kind of just accept that it's something quirky and different and accept it for what it is, then it's a lot of fun and it's really cool and it's great racing and it's fun to watch. But the sound, or the lack of sound, I think is actually really interesting, because without the engine noises, you can hear all of the other things that are still there with IndyCar, with Formula One, with sports cars, with all that, but you can't hear them because the engines just drown everything out. Like the tires squealing, like the crumpling of bodywork when there's an incident. You can hear the crowd a lot better. So it's a really interesting experience.
I'm assuming you can hear the drivetrain a little bit better as well.
I think that's, I mean, you can hear the motors. It's like a whine.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, some of that, like, it's kind of hard to tell the difference between the motor's sound and the gearbox sound, because I mean, at a certain speed, it's probably that the gearbox is making more noise than the electric motor.
Yeah. Yeah,
especially if they're, you know, I assume that they're using like straight cut gears, so those get pretty loud.
Yeah. Hey.
But it is also cool. I was standing for the race start. I was standing at turn one, and I was there with my girlfriend, and we were just having a normal conversation, like you and I are having right now, while the cars are going by in a huge pack. Like
that's
there's no way that's possible with any other form of motorsport.
Yeah, that's unheard of. Hey, real quick, a 2-week warning for the F4FR America's season opener at Road Atlanta. You can get tickets at svra.com. And also, speaking of noises, Trans Am's going to be there as well. So a little bit of ground pounder action. Coming up next on Inside Open Wheel is our chat with Ian Rodriguez.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
Well, a new driver to the FR Americas Championship is going to be racing with one of the teams that actually didn't do too bad in their first season in FR Americas. It is the Illinois-based Newman Wachs Racing. And Guatemalan's Ian Rodriguez will be joining the team alongside sophomore sensation Jordan Missig. Ian is with us right now. And Ian, first of all, welcome to the States, to the ultra-competitive FR Americas Championship. And thanks for taking some time to talk to us.
No, thanks to you. And it's going to be a good interview.
Yeah, then, you know, here's the thing I've got to ask. I know you and I were talking beforehand. You said you had to call home to have an interview there in Guatemala. What is the feeling like you coming here into the United States to run the, I would say, one of the most competitive junior formula series in the country?
Oh, it's a blessing of God because, be here, not so many people have these opportunities to be here and race in this championship, so I have to say thanks to all my family, to God, because yeah, it's a big opportunity, and I'm sure that we are gonna do a great job this year.
And you're running some awesome tracks along the schedule as well. Granted, you're gonna be running with SVRA, and it's a neat series to say the least, because you get to see cars that used to race, you know, professionally back then, but for you, you still get to race the big track. So what does that mean to you watching these race car drivers that you know growing up and being on the same tracks that they are?
For me, it's a pleasure, no? Because racing in Road America, Road Atlanta, in Texas, you know, VR, for me, it's a pleasure, no? It's a great opportunity, like I said, before, and a big opportunity, and I'm very happy to be there, no?
Well, we'll talk about your history in Guatemala first. I want to talk about what brought you to Newman Wachs Racing. I talked with Brian Hallahan, the team manager over there, and he said that you've talked before, but what was the deciding factor in moving here to run FR Americas, especially with Newman Wachs?
Well, for sure, Newman, it's a great team. It's also a big team, and for sure that was one of the reasons that I came here. It's because they are a big team, a great team, and they work very well. And then also the price, if you win this championship to go to Super Formula in Japan, it's a big opportunity, and it's a very nice championship out there. And so these two facts, take me to take the decision to come here, no?
And let's talk about that scholarship. It seems like a lot of the drivers that I've heard that come to the United States state that, yeah, you know, the price of racing here is great, but if you win the championship, you get to move up to another series, which you don't normally see in Europe and Southern America.
No, for sure. This is one of the things that USA have, and it's better than Europe, is that if you win, they help you. And in Europe, it's not like this. In Europe, you have to if you win, yes, you are a good driver, but they don't help you. So you have to have your budget, a big budget, to continue. But here in USA, that's the great thing, no? They help you to go forward. And so this is a very, very great thing that USA have.
And it's not your first time racing here in the States either. You ran some Indy Pro 2000 championship races back in 2019. Of course, you know how competitive that is. So You're racing with some guys who are also in the Indy Pro 2000 Championship alongside FR Americas. So you kind of know what the competition is here in the States.
No, for sure. It's very competitive. In when I raced Indy Pro 2000, I realized that it was very competitive. It's like Europe, no? Mm-hmm. Only that here they help you to go, the scholarship helps you to go forward. But the level it's so good. It's so good. I have to be honest. When I was in the pro, there was Kyle, then there was Rasmus and other people that are very fast. And like I said, I'm very happy and I hope that in God that it's going to be a good year.
And of course, you also had a competitive season with Italian F4, which really is, again, one of the most, it seems like you like to do the competitive series, which is good for you because it gives you a chance to, showcase your talents and, go in and run some of the best tracks in the world. So when you do go to a new championship, you can go say, hey, I've raced here, I've done this, I've done that.
Yeah, no, for sure. Look, I have to thanks God because where I race in Formula 4, then last year I made a F regional race in Imola in Italy with against Arthur Leclerc and that people. I have to only say thank you because it's a great opportunity to be with them, with that people. How much they drive all the time. They are driving and they are doing both championship, F3 and F regional. So for me, it's a pleasure. For me, it's a pleasure and it's a gift that God give to me. And yes, it's a pleasure to raise those championships.
Ian Rodriguez joins us on Inside Open Wheel. He'll be running with Newman Wachs Racing in the FR Americas Championship for 2021. You've spent a couple of days right now at the Newman Wachs Racing Shop. I have to say, I'm very happy you came when you did, because if you were here a week or two earlier, you most likely would have seen some snow on the ground, froze a little bit. But what has it been like spending time with the team and getting to know everybody?
For me, it's great. No, Brian is a good person. All the team are great persons, and I'm very, very happy to be with them because they know and they work a lot to do a great job, and they want also the same goal as me. It's to win this championship, I'm sure that we are gonna do a great job.
And you guys have some testing coming up as well to kind of get used, so you can get used to the car, get used to the team, and work with your teammate a little bit.
No, for sure. For sure, Jordan knows the car, knows the tracks, and so he's going to be a good reference, with telemetry and videos and data. It's going to be good. It's going to be good. I'm sure that he has a lot of experience, and we hope that we are going to do a great job for Newman race.
And not to mention, too, you're also in a car that podiumed a couple times with Victor Franzoni behind the wheel. So that's going to give you a little bit of confidence knowing that you're with a fast car, period.
I know, for sure. It's a great car. For sure, that's it. That I'm sure that it's a great car. It's a car that can win. So I'm very happy about that because I know that in the last race at Cota last year, Victor, it was very, very close to win the race against Linus. So I'm sure that I have a great car and a car that can win the championship.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about Linus Lundqvist. He's moved up to Indy Lights to go bully those guys up there. But what have you been doing? I mean, have you been behind the wheel of a sim to get a feel for some of these tracks that are on the schedule yet?
Well, honestly, we have we don't have so much budget, mm-hmm. Economic budget, so we cannot test a lot.
Right.
But the thing that I can do is watch videos, train, physical training, and telemetries. But test. We couldn't do so many tests, but the 8th and 9th March, so in a few days, we are going to do 2 days at VAR. So it's going to be very good because, yeah, test and knowing the car and knowing the people, how it works, it's going to be good for me and for the team.
Yeah, VAR is such a beautiful facility. I've been lucky to be there a couple times. But for those listening, let's find out a little bit more about Ian Rodriguez. What are some of your favorite things to do when you're not at the racetrack?
Work. I like working in my goals, and yeah, work and do physical training because it's a demanding sport. No, you have to be always training and always focused because you cannot make mistakes here. So yeah, working with to get my goals, to get my dream. And yeah, work is the thing that I most do, and faith in God.
Where do you see yourself? Where's the end goal? Is it Formula One, IndyCar?
Formula One, yeah.
Formula One, okay. Now I know here in the States, it's even though you are in the FR paddock, you still have support from Honda. You still have a lot of eyes watching you because if you don't go to Super Formula, you still have that chance to move up through the IndyCar, to IndyCar, which a lot of drivers still do. But it's got to be nice to know that you're here. You could have so many options in front of you, whatever you decide to choose in the long run.
Oh yes, for sure, it's gonna be God's plan. I'm sure of that, and that will be the best thing. That it's God's plans, and I trust Him. So yeah, every part I go, I'm gonna give my best, and yeah, we'll see what's gonna happen.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what's going to happen this year. It's going to be a really cool championship. For those listening here on this podcast, how can fans follow on social media your progress throughout the season?
I have Facebook, I have Instagram, and I have Twitter. My name is Ian Rodriguez 45. It's my name in both social media.
Ian, thanks for joining us. I'm really excited to see what the season brings for you and the Newman Walks Racing team. Good luck. We'll talk to you down the season.
Thank you. Thank you for the interview, and we hope in God that this is going to be a good year.
It's great to have you on board. I think you're going to be pretty good this year. We'll have more Inside Open Wheel to come.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Well, we've heard from Ian Rodriguez over in FR Americas. Once again, we'll talk more about the FR Americas test immediately following the interview with Juan Manuel Correa. But joining us now in Inside Open Wheel, he's really made a name for himself in sim racing. Ran in 1600s with Team Pelfrey last year, and now he's going over to England to run more 1600s, this time with Low Dempsey Racing. It's Max Esterson. First of all, congratulations on your sim racing title with the TireRack.com Road to Indy E-Series. I got to say, that's no surprise seeing you up there at the top, though.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, first of all. And yeah, it was a good time in the Road to Indy E-Series. Just glad to take that home. It's a long five races, I think, but luckily, it all worked out in the end.
Well, it's lots of virtual air miles, too, from track to track, so that helps as well. Charlie Ante joins us as well, and Charlie also raced in the British form of the Ford 1600, also raced in the F1600 series. So Charlie's a little bit of insight what it's like to race over there. Do you have any words of wisdom for him to race in England?
Don't be intimidated. It's really not that different from here. Yeah, that was sort of my first impression.
And anyway, so let's talk about this because it's not the first time that you've raced in England. You're one of the finalists for the Team USA scholarship, but you still went over and raced with Low Dempsey Racing for the Walter Hayes Trophy and the big Formula Ford Festival. Was that the pushing point for you to go over to continue your 1600 career?
Yeah, I think so. And a few months before that, maybe a month before that, I went over and ran for a team called Phil Wales Racing. I did three race weekends with them at Brands Hatch. And then, a month later, I went back over for the two big races at the end of the year. And I mean, considering the little seat time I had in the car with Low Dempsey Racing, I think it went pretty well. Sixth at the festival, 14th at the Hayes. So I think with more seat time and just, more time in the car, I have a pretty good shot at doing well this year.
And you're going to run in the main championship class, correct?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, because Charlie, you ran in the class that was for the older vehicles, because at that time, if I remember correctly, they came out with the new MyGall chassis, correct?
Yeah, so when I was racing, they were introducing the new EcoBoost cars, which usually in the past, when they introduced when they went from the Kent to the Duratec, they basically just bolted the new engine into the old cars. They didn't really change the chassis regulations that much, but when they introduced the EcoBoost cars, they completely changed brand new chassis. I think MyGall was the only one that really made them. And then the next year they put wings on them and sort of, it just kind of morphed into F4. So the cars were more expensive than what I was willing to spend. So I bought one of the older Duratec cars and we raced in the lower class, which worked for us because it was literally just me and a friend from college that were running the car. And the new class kind of moved all of the big high budget teams away into the upper class, so we were racing just the smaller teams.
Let's also talk about your 1600 championship last year. I think it was one of the most competitive that we've seen over the past several years for F1600. It was basically two teams. It was you and your team Pelfrey and Rice Race Prep, and it seemed like every race there was at least two or three wide within inches of each other for the win.
Yeah, it was usually a pretty big scrap for, the top five. All of us were pretty much close enough on pace where with the draft we'd all stick together pretty much five to seven, depending on how much we scrapped up front, would keep more cars in it. But it was a good time. A little frustrating at times with the draft, but that's the way it is.
Well, and that's how you learn to get ready for next year, too, because, Charlie said it's super competitive over there, but it's no different because now you're learning the art of drafting. And we've seen in the past several years, if you want to move up to IndyCar, you got to learn that, especially for the ovals.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely good to learn it early, and it's definitely magnified in 1600 in the U.S. Maybe not so much in the U.K., I think, partly because just circuit nature, straights are shorter, and just the tires are physically smaller, so the hole in the air is a little smaller. But definitely still a factor.
Max Esterson joins us on Inside Open Wheel. He is part of Low Dempsey Racing for the 2021 season in British Formula Ford. Wait, is it Formula Ford or is it still 1600 over there?
Formula Ford.
Okay, Formula Ford. It is Ford. Okay. All right. Yeah. Go ahead, Charlie.
Because it's they only race the Hondas here in the U.S.
Oh yeah, that's right. Anyway, So what was the whole, what was the whole rationale behind moving over to England to continue Formula Fords?
Mostly, I think for the dollar, it's the best kind of value you could get, considering like the field is super strong, usually pretty big, and just, good cars to race. And then plus the whole thing, obviously with England, you get a huge number of different conditions, so very good training ground there.
Now we have a lot of sim racers who listen to the show, as you found out, the antics of the show, so I don't have to tell you that left and right. You started out sim racing, which a lot of people listen to who are sim racers. So how did you make that jump from sim racing into karting?
Yeah, I'll give a little background first. So I started maybe 10 years ago sim racing. My older brother got a G25 for, I think, his birthday or Christmas one year. Then I kind of took it over and took over his iRacing account. Kind of lost interest in it. So that's where I kind of got started. Then I just kind of kept progressing until maybe 2 or 3 years ago, where I was racing at kind of the pro level on iRacing. And then in 2018, the summer of 2018, I got into a kart for the first time, and then spent 1 year club karting, and then jumped into cars after that.
So listen up, kids. There's a way, but go ahead, Charlie.
So, Max, I'm wondering what you would consider are the biggest differences about sim racing and the real stuff.
I think some of it is a bit different in the braking. Just, I mean, one thing to consider is that on the sim, I've driven almost all GT cars. So, like, there's a difference there between open wheel cars, but I think the braking's a little different. Also, just like the feeling of grip in the track on different lines, I feel like in real life it's more line dependent where the grip is. That's kind of the main difference, I feel.
All right, so let's talk about what the future holds for you. Do you want to stay in Europe and, you know, move up through the FIA ladder, or you have ambitions to come back and run, you know, maybe F4, FRA, or at the road to Indy ladder?
I think right now it's kind of between the road to Indy and something like British F3.
Okay.
But I'd say I'm leaning a bit towards the road to Indy.
And this, the full disclosure, like we had last week, this is recorded before the Road to Indy All-Star race, so we don't know how it's going to end up. Okay, let's fast forward. No, seriously, though. We don't know how it's going to end up today. That's got to be exciting to be racing against some of the drivers you've looked up to. You know, you may not be on the same track next to them, but you're still racing with them virtually. You know, your Connor Daly's, your Sage Karam's, you know, drivers who've made their way through the Road to Indy.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity. I'm glad. It's really cool that Road to Indy did that with the top five in the E-Series, that they got invited. It's at Gateway, so we'll see what happens on the oval.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I mean, you know, you're so used to running road courses with, you know, karting, 1600s. How are you fair on ovals when it comes to iRacing?
I do very little oval racing, to be honest. But...
Ah, sounds familiar, buddy, does it, Charlie?
I get used to it.
I'll give you a tip. Learn what the weight jacker does. And learn which way to go on it.
Yes, and that way you don't end up in the wall, Pocono, in the wall almost every oval you've raced at. I think you've thrown the first you've caused the first caution in both those Indy Elite Series ovals, correct?
Possibly.
I have to go back and look at the stats.
I did Homestead without causing a caution.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about Homestead. Oh, the inside open wheel 225. I was so proud of you for not crashing in that.
The race that you sponsor, you forgot about it.
Well, you know what? That was a long time ago. I told my wife we were working from home. I've been working from home for the past year, and yeah, so.
But actually, some advice, if you're brave enough to take any advice from me.
Don't.
Something that I learned when I started actually getting into the ovals on iRacing is that you get very severely punished for overdriving the entry into corners.
I've done a little bit of NASCAR in iRacing. I've learned that the hard way, where I'm like quick for three laps, and then everyone drives by me.
Mm-hmm. It took me a long time to figure that out.
Now, with this being week 13 on iRacing, Charlie taught me this. So, Charlie, you should be happy that I actually brought this up. With this being week 13 on iRacing and, you know, doing special things and just strange things altogether, what do you have planned to race where and when that you normally wouldn't race?
I mean, usually during week 13, I'm pretty boring, to be honest. It's usually right before a big event, like it is now. So Sebring 12 hours coming up. So I'll probably do some testing for that, but maybe I'll test out Hockenheim, maybe the Bristol dirt track.
Yep. Let's talk about this 12 hours of Sebring. I've been asked to be recruited in it. I have not raced on iRacing before, so I've still got to get you. I got heavy wheel and pedals, but I still need to do it. But let's talk about that Sebring 12 hour. Are you running with the pro version, or are you going to run with everybody else?
It's the same for everyone. It's just there's a top split where like the highly rated drivers all get put into the same room by rating. So I'll make it into that, I think. I've won that top split the past 2 years in the GT3 class.
And that, Charlie, you're in the bottom split for that race, correct?
Sorry, I just had to dip out for a second.
Yeah, Charlie had to dip out and get his delivery anyway. We're talking about the 12 hours of Sebring, the iRacing 12 hours of Sebring. You're in the bottom split, though, correct?
Not necessarily. I'm probably going to be somewhere in the middle.
Okay.
So there's probably going to be like at least 8 to 15 different splits, maybe even more. So I'll probably be somewhere in the middle.
There you go, champ. Just don't hit anything.
Yeah, I'm usually not too bad with the endurance races. I can get into a rhythm. It's those sprint races on the ovals that get me.
Sprint race on the ovals. You're lucky I'm not the commentator for the Indy Elite Series. That's all I'm going to say. All right, Max, I know that we're going to try and follow you throughout the season. We'll, you know, have different segments. Obviously, we're working to get some, we're just working on some things. But until then, how can fans follow you on social media?
Yeah, it's simple. Just Max Esterson, one word, on Instagram and Twitter. That's where most of my stuff is.
Fantastic. Max Esterson, good luck with Low Dempsey Racing, and we'll chat with you down the road.
Yep. Thanks, guys.
Coming up next, Charlie takes a little bit of a break. He's going to turn some laps on iRacing on Dirt Kart Road America. I will be sitting down with Juan Manuel Correa. He is the American driver who will be running in Formula 3, making his big return following the very serious crash at Spa in F2. We'll be right back.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
So as you know, we're having a little bit of an international flavor to this week. We had Max Esterson on. Now we have the driver that's running in F3, and he's going to be making a comeback after a pretty serious crash at Spa. We'll touch on that just a little bit, but I do want to get more into Juan Manuel Correa. How you doing? Great to see you. Obviously, you're back. I'm assuming you're back in Europe, correct?
Yeah. Hi, Jeremy. I'm in Barcelona.
Okay. Okay, so getting ready for the F3 season. Let's talk about what's going on with F3. I know there's some winter testing going on as well for F2 at least. So how's your preseason been so far getting ready for the F3 championship?
So preseason in terms of testing, official testing-wise, has been non-existent so far. Okay. The first two official tests got postponed due to COVID restrictions around the Spain. I've done a private test with a team in an old GP3 car, which is what we are allowed to run now in the preseason. And that's been going good. You know, it was my first time back in a car after 1.5 years. So it was more of a kind of a shakedown type of test. And, you know, just to see what things I need to work on, how the legs are doing, and kind of start getting back into the pace slowly. And apart from that, it's just been a lot of rehab, back and forth, you know, here with medical crew, doctors, x-rays, and, you know, I'm still in very much in the middle of a rehab process. So, you know, I'm just trying to pull ahead as much as I can before the season starts.
And what's that like going into a private test with a GP3 car, with your injuries and still trying to rehab, so you're close to 100%.
Yeah, I mean, it was challenging. You know, I'm not really close to 100% in the legs, actually, believe it or not. I am able to drive, but to be honest, right before the test, up until the test, we were not sure if I was going to be able to drive properly or not. That's why I keep saying the team took a huge gamble on me. It looks like it's going to pay off. But yeah, I mean, there were a lot of unknowns walking into that test. I was able to drive. The car needed no modifications. So you probably don't know much about my injuries, but I lost most of my mobility on the right ankle. Mm-hmm. Had multiple fractures around both tibias, left and right foot. The left one is not so damaged. The right one has irreversible injuries. I will never have full ankle mobility, but I am able to push the throttle, which was my main concern. Another issue we ran into was the left is just getting into a bit of pain on the brake. You know, the brake pressure is very high in these cars. But that's something that we can work on with more therapy and increasing the strength. Apart from that, the whole test was just about me getting back into grips, you know, of driving a car 1.5 years sitting in a wheelchair, didn't do many favors in terms of feeling. So it was tough, you know, in my mind, I remembered how it was to drive fast, but I couldn't quite transform that into my body doing it, you know. So it took some time, and there's still a lot of work to be done before the season starts.
Now, what is the main difference between that GP3 car and your F3 car? Because you were in F2 when the crash happened, but now I wouldn't say you're taking a step back. There's a lot of drivers that looks like they're going to flip-flop between F3 and F2 this year for more seat time.
I mean, the difference technically is around 200 horsepower less in F3. Obviously, a bit less downforce, smaller tires. The races are different, so we have no pit stops in F3. We actually have three races per weekend this year, but it's 3 40-minute races. So there's no, you don't get that pit stop experience, which you get in F2 preparing you for F1. Apart from that, I mean, it's a very tight championship, super high level as well. There's 10 more cars on the grid, so each team gets to have three cars each instead of two, which makes the races really messy, you know, and you have to take care. There's a lot of incidents going on. But no, it's I think one of the toughest championships out there at the moment, just because of the level of talent that is going up through the ranks and into that category. And I think it'll be a tough season for me. You know, I have a lot of work to do. I'm with a good team, but personally, it will not be easy, you know, to get back into the groove and be fighting. I feel like I'm kind of like the old one now in the category, which is the first time that's happened to me. But yeah, I mean, I'm excited. I'm excited. And as you said, it is a step back if you see it category wise. I went from F2 to F3, but looking where I was a year ago, right after the crash, to be even driving this year is a huge victory. So I don't see it as a step back.
Yeah, it's a huge victory, especially because, you know, you see drivers who have been in it crashes like yours and really haven't been able to get into open wheel, back at open wheel, Alex Zanardi being the number one case. But I've got to say, having a strange 2020, they had to work to your benefit because, you know, you were able to get back to the track at Spa when the FIA ended up there, but you didn't have to worry about racing because you had your rehab and now, and you know, trying to get back into the seat, you didn't have to worry about that too much because of all the restrictions.
Yes and no.
Okay.
To be fair, it helped me in the beginning of the 2020 season when, I mean, right when I had the crash, there was never any hope in my mind or in anybody's mind that I would be ready for 2020. You know, I had the crash August 2019, and the doctors told me I would be out for minimum 3 years, and that was if I ever got to drive again. So the way it helped me, it was mentally, you know, the season started quite late in 2020, so it was tough mentally for me to see all my peers racing, you know, and going up the ladder while I was at my home sitting in a wheelchair. But apart from that, it was more of a negative for me. You know, many of my surgeries got delayed because obviously hospitals collapsed. Mm-hmm. Rehabilitation centers closed. I lost a few months there. So no, it made things a bit tougher, and it keeps making things tougher, but for everyone now, you know, like I was talking to you about it, the test of it postponed, and everyone's just kind of like in their tippy toes, not knowing what's going to happen next week.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, everybody, you know, the schedules have all come out, but everybody's saying, you know, write it with a pencil. You know, I'm looking at the schedule here for F3. It looks like a very diverse set of tracks. You know, you start off in Barcelona at round one, then you go over to Le Castellet, and then into Germany, Budapest. You're back at Spa for round five, Zandvoort round six, which I'm really excited about. I can't wait to see you guys run on Zandvoort. And then for you, you end the season at Austin. So it's an interesting mix of classic versus newer tracks for this F3 championship.
Hello?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, I lost you right at Sandvoort.
Okay, no worries. All right, let's try it again. And what's interesting is for this year, you know, you're talking about schedule changes. And of course, obviously, we're going to be writing this with a pencil this year because of the simple fact that we don't know what the heck's going to happen. You take a look, you start round one at Spain, then you go to France, Spielberg, Budapest, over to Spa, Zandvoort, and then you end your season at Austin at the COTA. So it's an interesting mix of tracks between classic and the newer in F3 this year.
Yeah, I think we have a great schedule, to be fair. I really like most of the tracks. I've never been to COTA. I'm super excited mm-hmm. about that one. I'm glad to be doing it there. And I think especially, you know, I race under an American license as an American. And that's a home race at the end of the day. So that doesn't come by too often when you're an American racing in these categories. Also, Sanford, I've been there some years ago in the F4. It's changed now because they, you know, reaccommodated it for the F1 races. But it's I think it's going to be a challenging track and a cool event to be at. So, yeah, the championship is going to be a huge roller coaster.
Well, not to mention, I think this is the first time in a very long time we have multiple Americans in one FIA series, because you're going to be with ART Grand Prix. Jack Crawford's going to be with High Tech. So it's an exciting time for ladder racing in Europe for Americans.
Yeah. Actually, I guess we're the only two Americans right now, I believe, right? Because Logan Sargeant, he's not going to be on the grid this year, it seems like.
That's what it sounds like, yeah.
Which is a shame. I'm good friends with him. He's very talented. So yeah, I mean, we'll see if we can have a bit of an American championship fight going on or what's going to happen. But no, it's exciting, you know. As we were talking before, it's a whole different world there, and sometimes Americans don't realize that there's their own people racing over in Europe, and the same thing with Europeans. When you talk to them about American racing, they don't know what the hell is going on down here. So yeah, I mean, we'll see how it goes with Jack. I think he's a rookie as well mm-hmm. in F3, but I've heard good things about him. I think he's talented, so we'll see what he can do.
Let's talk about your team, ART Grand Prix. They're usually up near the front every year, you know, between Prima, Trident, you even see Carlin up there sometimes. So you're with a good team this year.
I am with a good team. That's why I took this opportunity as soon as I got it, you know. I had in mind, you know, to look also for an F2 seat. So I was not always decided to go down to F3 for my comeback. Initially, I spoke to F2 teams, but in the end, I was not able to get a top seat in F2. And then this opportunity came along in F3 with a top seat. And it just made sense for me, you know. I'd rather be fighting for victories in F3 than be running midfield in F2, definitely. So yeah, I'm excited about that fact too, that I'm with ART.
And that was one of the questions that many of your fans sent in. We'll have those here in our next segment, because there's just so much to go over with F3. You know, stack field, as we said, but what are you looking forward to most about this season running with, you know, running up near the front?
To be honest, I'm just looking forward to my personal pleasure of driving again. You know, I've been two seasons out, basically, and I've missed it so much this whole time. You know, I've just been thinking about driving, racing. I'm a competitive guy. I love competition. So first and foremost, I'm just going to enjoy it for myself. It's something I've learned through this process, that you got to enjoy life. Life can be short, and you have to enjoy the process, you know. But I'm also definitely enjoying to not only have a competitive car, which, you know, fingers crossed anything can happen, mm-hmm. but looking how ART has been performing, you know, I'm pretty sure the car will be good. But also to work with such a professional team, I think it brings a lot of value to a driver that's still developing. You know, I've been unlucky and lucky, but unlucky in the sense that I've had to work with some midfield and backfield teams, and you know, they're great people. I love all of them personally as people, but as teams, they don't bring the same value to a driver that a team such as ART or Prema, for example, gives you, and it makes you grow and it makes you become a better driver. So I am just trying to squeeze the most out of that opportunity that I have this year.
Well, Emmanuel Correa joins us here on Inside Open Wheel. We're going to take a quick break. Coming up next, your questions for the American driver running in F3 next season.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
With American F3 driver Juan Manuel Correa here on Inside Open Wheel. Juan, I've got to say, I've been doing this for a year, and on Twitter I've been asking people, hey, you know, give us your questions for your drivers. You post it, And I get a ton of questions here in my inbox. So you must have a following over in Europe.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. Thank you. thank you for the guys that put the questions. I'm glad there's interest. Yeah. And yeah, I retweeted your message and I saw that we had some responses. So I'm excited to answer them.
Yeah, I'm excited too. And if this is your first time listening, please feel free to listen to us on any podcast service. We do this weekly and we cover everything. So here's what we have. We'll start with Shiv Bignari. He asks, first of all, how do you feel about returning back to the track?
I feel happy, first of all. I feel excited. And I feel like I'm back where I belong.
What made you return?
What made me return? My love for the sport. The fact that this is what I've dedicated my life to. And just my drive, my competitiveness, the adrenaline, you know, it's my passion. And the crash did not take my passion away from me. So that's why I'm back.
And that's huge right there. What do you feel your objective for the season is?
I think my objective is just to, you know, do a good rehab, first of all, that's going on the side with the season, and just use ART as a team to grow as a driver, you know, to get back to where I was in 2019, get back to that level. Obviously, I want to get podiums, I want to get wins, but that is secondary at the moment on my list. First of all, I just want to be back in a car, be able to drive it to 100% of its capacity. Mm-hmm. And I want to enjoy the season as well.
And how did you feel about receiving support from Sauber, Alfa Romeo, all the way through this?
Oh, I feel amazing about it. They're a great bunch of people. Fred Vasseur, the team principal, he's a shareholder in ART as well. So he has believed in me greatly throughout this whole time, and I really appreciate that. I've been in contact with many of the members from Alpha, and it's just like a big family. I think it's one of the advantages when you're with one of the smaller F1 teams. You know, it's a very tight-knit circle, and it's nice.
And it was LV Norris underscore on Twitter also asked about the same question. So we'll say those two asked the same questions. Grand Prix Grandstand, we mentioned this in the last segment. They asked, were there any F2 seats as an option? If not, would you have rejoined F2 if there were?
That's a good question. Yes, there were some F2 seats as an option. None really that I saw as potential front runner seats. So that was one of the main reasons why I didn't go directly back into F2, but also because of the fact that the F2 season is starting much sooner. You know, they're already in their preseason testing right now, and I wanted to have as much time as possible right now to work on my rehab and arrive to the season in a stronger physical form.
The Piastri on Twitter asks, what did you miss most about racing?
The adrenaline, and the rush you get from it, but also the people around, you know, the lifestyle, you become used to it. The competitiveness, the pressure, it sounds weird. I never thought I'd say I missed pressure, but I did, you know. I felt like my life became so boring from one day to another, and I needed a little bit of spice. And I guess that's what happens when you've been racing since you're 7 years old for every season.
And that's one thing that's interesting that I try and tell. It's hard to explain to people about that because I've been, an announcer for over a decade, and I've been just, with a country club racetrack, but it's still you still have to have that passion to do what you do. And it's hard to explain to people when you're on the outside looking in, and when it happens, it's like,
Yeah. Yeah. I think only people that have experienced it know what we're talking about with that, spice that racing brings to you. But yeah, it's hard to describe, and I think the best way I can put it is it's like a rush. It's a competitiveness, adrenaline, but it's also the whole, I guess, pressure that you have on top of, even if it's, like you say, a small country club race or a world championship in the highest levels, you feel that pressure, and once you get through it, and if you succeed, it's the greatest feeling in the world. So I think that's what brings people back.
Last but not least, at Phantom Ghastly on Twitter, what are you anticipating the emotions to be when you enter the paddock again to drive for the first time?
I think it's going to be emotional. You know, I think being there last year in Spa, 1 year after the crash, was very emotional. But being in a paddock again with me as a driver, within that role, it'll feel like I'm back home, but it'll feel different at the same time, you know, because I've been through a lot. I've changed personally through what happened in the accident and everything I had to endure. So yeah, I think it'll be nice. I'm going to enjoy it, but it will be different than it was before.
Yeah, it's interesting because you don't, when drivers go through what you've been through, they usually go to a different series that's totally separate from where they were. But you're coming back into a same paddock where you know a lot of the people. So what, I mean, have you thought of gone through the thought process yet of what emotions you might go through, or are you just going to go in and see what happens?
I haven't gone into it personally of what I might go through. I have a feeling that yes, it will be emotional. And I you know, even in the first test I did some weeks ago in the GP3 car, it was emotional in many ways, but at the same time, I'm so focused on improving and, you know, getting back to 100%. And, you know, I also have the competitive driver aspect of it that I think that's going to cloud really a lot of the emotions during the race weekends and the races themselves. Because at the end, you know, it is a comeback, but I'm there to do a job, and that job is to perform. So that will cloud a lot of it.
Well, for our regular listeners, we are going to work on getting Juan on more often and talking about the F3 championship. And I'm excited because this is going to be a lot of fun. How can fans who don't normally follow you on social media?
I'm on all platforms. Instagram is probably the one I keep the most updated, and it's Juan Manuel Correa _. There's also the F3 series Instagram, which keeps you updated with the whole series. Twitter, I'm at Juan Manuel Correa, Facebook too. So yeah, I mean, I would love it if, you know, I can get a bit more American support and Americans behind the series, behind me, and that would be awesome. So I hope to see you there in the socials.
Well, we'll definitely keep everybody up to date on what's going to happen, because you're going to hear more of Juan here in the next couple of months here on Inside Open Wheel. I cannot pronounce your name as well as you do, because I've got a thick German tongue, as my family tells me. Juan Manuel Correa, thanks for joining us, and we'll chat with you in a couple weeks.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, Charlie Ante and I sit down and discuss just some random things as we normally do next.
This is Inside Open Wheel with your host, Jeremy Scott.
Don't forget, if you've missed any part of the broadcast, you want to listen to more of it, or you just want to listen to more broadcasts, you can always go on to Apple, Google Play, Anchor.fm, any podcast service, and listen back. Also, we are on TuneIn. Charlie Ante, Jeremy Scott here with you, and it's time for our Sim Racing Corner. And this past week, there was the TireRack.com All-Star Invitational. So how the scenario for this, Charlie, went is... I lost my ring. All right. How the scenario went with this is the top five in the TireRack.com Road to Indy E Series were invited. A whole bunch of Road to Indy graduates were in there. So you've had Peter Dempsey, RC Enerson, Oliver Askew, Connor Daly, which what's funny is the picture that they used for Connor Daly was taken at the first pro race we had at Autobahn, the Harris Autobahn Grand Prix, presented by Mazda. And I'm looking at that, it's like, holy crap, I remember that. I felt old. So a whole bunch of stars. Dalton Kellett was in there. So it was a trip. It was a doubleheader. Here's what I find interesting. The two drivers that won are drivers that should be in IndyCar today. RCE.
Where was it?
That was at Gateway. So worldwide.
In the...
Yeah, and the,
that's right. Yes,
on
that's right.
iRacing, even though it was warm enough to hold a race at Gateway, I'll say that much. So race one was won by RC Enerson. Race two by Oliver Askew. I'm happy for both of them, but
they need to be in the IndyCar series. Full stop.
Yeah, well, I just have to find someone that's willing to write a check.
Oh, you know that one all too well. Let's see here. Peter Dempsey took the pole award for the first race, the Symmetric Driver Performance Labs pole award, settled into the lead, early on. Let's see here. Oliver Askew running for Cape Motorsports this past weekend. Here's been a good surprise throughout this championship, though. Matt Clark, the Canadian F1600 champion, really proved his worth. I would like to see when he becomes of age. I think he's like 13 or 14 years old. I'd like to see him in USF 2000. I think he would give those drivers a good run for their money.
Man, they're just getting younger and younger.
I know. Oh, Sebastian Zavedra is also in the series as well. So, and Stefan Wilson. There's a video out there of Stefan giving Peter Dempsey a little bit of a bump draft down that front straightaway. So that ends that E series. Now for the E series that I said we will be covering this year. Let's see if I can find it. I think I may have deleted it. Crap. It is the IndyCar E series. Yay.
Ooh, yay.
So it's gonna work different than last year's E series. It's gonna be live on IndyCar.com. Okay, and it starts Thursday, the 18th. Each race will be streamed live on IndyCar.com along with IndyCar's YouTube channel and Facebook page and iRacing's YouTube channel. Secondary channels will also be available from NTT IndyCar Series drivers' personal accounts. So, I would imagine that you'll see Scott McLaughlin, Tony Kanaan, Jimmy Johnson, Romain Grosjean. I bet you that they will all Twitch. They'll Twitch it.
Mm-hmm.
Connor Daly is obviously a must-watch. Here's how this is going to work. It's going to be a three-race series. Thursday, March 18th is at Circuit Gilles Villeneuve in Montreal. The next week is at Homestead Miami Speedway on the Oval. And Thursday, April 1st, on a fan-voted track. I still vote Bathurst. Bar none. Fans can vote March 12th through the 15th for the site of the IndyCar iRacing Challenge season finale via IndyCar social channels. Bathurst. Season 2 will feature a stellar lineup of NTT IndyCar Series drivers, including two-time Series champion Joseph Newgarden, and Series champions in Indianapolis 500 presented by Gamebridge winners Ryan Hunter Race, Simon Pagenaud, and Will Power. Also competing will be Takuma Sato, Felix Rosenquist, Graham Rahal, Ned Carpenter, Young Stars Pato Award, and Alex Palou, and colorful and popular Connor Daly. Business in the front, party in the back. You'll see Scott McLaughlin and Romain Grosjean in the E series. One entry each week will also feature a driver from the Road to Indy presented by Cooper Tires IndyCar Ladder System. Last year of each IndyCar iRacing Challenge Season 2 event will begin at 6:30, and teams can design car liveries to match their 2021 NTT IndyCar Series paint schemes, and also team strategists and engineers may participate in support of their driver. We'll have an entry list for you next week. We won't be able to cover this because obviously we'll probably be recording before or just a little bit after. We might have it next week, but we'll let you know on our social media channels. And I've got to say, so far, Charlie, the paint scheme of the year has got to be Scott McLaughlin's PPG paint scheme.
Yeah, I saw somebody photoshopped one so that it was a black and white photo, but
yeah,
the colors of the PPG scheme were in color.
Oh, that's slick.
Yeah, it looked pretty cool. I have to confess, I haven't been keeping up with the livery releases. I do, honestly, I think that they should make that a bigger deal than it is.
I agree.
Because, I mean, in Formula One, you have the big reveal of all the cars, and they all look so similar that it's really just a reveal of the liveries and the color design. And I think that IndyCar needs to get onto that that kind of show. Because there could be an entire, like, with Formula One, there's kind of an entire week or two where the new cars, the new, like, you know, Ferrari releases their new car and everyone's talking about, oh, does it look better than last year? Does it look worse? And then McLaren comes out the next day and et cetera, et cetera. And I think IndyCar should get on that too. They should, you know, they should schedule the release of their liveries to be sequentially each day over like the course of a week or two.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. I think it would generate more interest. And what they should do too is utilize these tests to do something like that. Yeah, I mean, the testing liveries are cool. I think that Arrow McLaren has the best testing livery out of anyone, but I think it would give more credence and more attention to these tests if, you know, like in the morning, Andretti does their rollout, then they test in the afternoon, in the midday, you know, maybe McLaren just has a show car out and here's our livery for this year. Then they test, you know, so on and so forth.
Yeah, I think it would give them some much needed buzz in the lead up. In the off season, like towards the end of the off season, when things are starting to warm up a little bit.
Yeah. So, yeah, no. Or
but also, I want to go back to the E series because I was thinking about it, and my vote for the track I think would go to old school Lime Rock.
Ooh, that's good, but I still say Bathurst.
Yeah.
You know what though?
They're both kind of a little bit trolly.
How or no?
Nine more so.
Yeah. How about? Or what about this? For everybody whining and complaining that you know, IndyCar needs to go to Road Atlanta, why not put them at Road Atlanta?
That would be pretty cool.
I would.
Speaking of Road Atlanta, I raced the IR01 there.
Okay.
Which is the like basically iRacing exclusive fantasy F1 car.
Right.
And it lapped VIR or sorry, not VIR, Road Atlanta in under a minute. And it made Road Atlanta seem like a bull ring.
I believe it.
It is wild. But yeah, that would be cool seeing them go there.
There, VIR, because I actually had somebody ask me, well, VIR, you know, it's a professional racetrack. Why don't they race there? And I can tell you now, lots of wide open spaces, lots of places to go wrong in an IndyCar.
Yeah, I think that they would need to upgrade the runoff and the safety. I mean, they don't even have gravel traps anywhere.
Nope.
I don't think.
Well, you would know. They might have. You would know. Give me a second.
You know what I do know about VIR is that they have very bumpy runoff, and
yes.
If you get off into the grass is hiding all the bumps, and so you might flip a car. If you get into those bumps.
Or end up on top of the tire wall.
Oh, you know what also? I heard a real horror story from VIR.
Oh, go ahead.
A friend of mine's brother who raced in F2000, he went off and got into the grass. And I don't know if you're familiar with how F2000 and F1600 cars as well, the way that they're constructed is that there's a space frame chassis, right?
Right.
And then on the bottom, there's a sheet of aluminum that is riveted to the bottom frame.
Oh,
right? And that's that's the floor of the car, right? You see where I'm going with this?
I know exactly where you're going with this. Ow.
Yeah, so just for the people listening, he went off into the grass, into the dirt, and the bottom of the car caught in the dirt, and it ripped the bottom aluminum floor off of the frame, and so his legs were just, you know, free floating out there and could have easily gone down into the dirt. Fortunately, he was okay. But that's just a sheer miracle.
So
that his feet weren't mangled.
So, if you take a look at the live chat, I'm streaming the map. Okay. So, take a look at the map. Looks like turn one has a little bit of a runoff, right? You know, probably about 500 yards from there.
Yeah, that's like directly, and that's basically just if someone loses their brakes.
Yeah, which it's happened before, and that's it. Now, I forgot who I was talking to. It might have been the late, great Jim Martin. Yes, it was. So, when I was announcing at VIR Pro Weekend back in 2013, he was telling me a story of superbikes, okay, AMA, beating and banging against each other, coming to the checker flag. They take the checker flag. Both bikes went straight off, well off the property. Oh, yeah, just straight off. They both made it back on, but still. But there's runoff there, but yeah, I mean, they would have to do gravel traps. They probably have to pave. I would imagine Oak Tree, the runoff there, that would have to get extended into North Carolina. But
actually, literally.
No,
possibly.
I am. Yeah, let's see here. Pull up the map. Yeah, I think it would have. It would. I think so.
Interesting. Yeah, but I mean, there's space to do it, and I think you would have to add some walls.
Yeah,
new walls as well, and fences.
There'd have to be some new spectator zones. So the inside course, you would have to put some stuff there too. But unfortunately, I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, I mean, it's already like just talking about it kind of sounds like it's starting to get expensive.
Speaking of. Speaking of changes around the track, there are rumblings that that Road America are making some changes as well to their facility in preparation for the NASCAR Cup Series. One of those is redoing that gate 3, and they're supposed to add some more spectator zones too. So we'll see what happens there. I'm excited for that. Speaking of exciting, you're racing this weekend as well.
I am. Yes. Not in the real world yet,
There's
in the next Coca-Cola bottling company of Kokomo.
Yeah.
Oh, I said that right.
You said it right!
You know, I meant to say it to mess it up on purpose and be funny, but I got it right.
Hey, you got it right. Well, you know, we'll pay attention to what you may or may not do this season in the real world, but this weekend is the Detroit Grand Prix at Belle Isle, which if you've been there in real life, you know that during the race weekends, it's a very beautiful facility. And let's see here. So I'm on the website for the timing and scoring. Looks like the fastest lap by Andreas Werner in IR18 is a 1:11.271. It's going to be interesting to see if that time is going to drop. It's a 43-lap event going to be held Sunday and sim.tv. Taking a look at the point standings, Andreas Eich, doesn't have a win yet. Hopefully he'll break through, but after being Mr. Consistency, he is your points leader. He's also tied with our most recent winner, Philip Kraus. They both have 207 points. Chris DeMere, 204. Andrew Kinsella with 191. Ray Kingsbury in the top five with 173 points. The biggest mover last race was Wilson Nieto. Even though he has four races under his belt, he was plus 13 with 16th. He has 109 points. So Flynn Lazier has two less races than you, and he's one position above you as well.
Well, he probably knows how the weight tracker works.
Yes, he probably does.
That's the key. That's what I figured out the last race. I'm excited to use it. Use that new information in the next race.
Have you been testing with it the whole time?
Well, I mean, obviously, the joke is that we don't use the weight tracker on the road courses. I knew that, too.
Well,
see, I'm learning.
Next time you can use the weight trackers at Chicagoland Speedway on the 21st. I still say we got to get Sam Hornish Jr. on so he can teach you about a weight tracker.
Well, if you want to make the call, I'm down.
If I can get a hold of him. but yeah, so it's going to be an interesting week, I think. It's the first street course of the year for the Coca-Cola Kokomo Indy Elite Series. We're also narrowing down on the 6th annual Indy 500 presented by Catalyst 317. I know we were talking about, we've been talking about doing some sort of pre-hype. I've been talking with Joe Branch on that. So closer we get to that race, we will definitely have some insight with that. That is actually going to be a 200-lap race, so it's going to be a full 500-miler. And you can you can use your weight jacker the whole time too. So you
know. Oh yes.
And on that bombshell, it's time to end. Next week on Inside Open Wheel, we're hoping to sit down with Miles Rowe. He is the newest driver for Force Indy in USF 2000. We'll also catch up on the Detroit Grand Prix at Belle Isle. So for Ian Rodriguez, Max Esterson, and Juan Manuel Correa, and our driver analyst, Charlie Ante, we thank you for listening to Inside Open Wheel. Don't forget about the live broadcast of the Detroit Grand Prix on Sim.TV. That's going to be Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern. I'm Jeremy Scott. Thanks for listening to Inside Open Wheel. We'll see you next week. Catch us on any major podcast service that is out there where we're at. Inside Open Wheel is a production of Trackout Multimedia.